this episode, I sit down with Brian Castle, founder of Builder Methods, to talk about what's going on in his world with AI, with software development, with creating an AI-forward business, what's up with Clarity Flow and his new podcast. I've known Brian for a very long time. And as you'll find out, he was one of our very first customers at Podcast Motor, kind of the precursor to Castos. Brian, someone I love, respect, and I think you will too. I think you'll really enjoy this conversation with Brian Castle. So I want to talk about AI. I'm in the midst of this 100 days of AI challenge for myself. I'm publishing a video on my YouTube channel every day for 100 days about AI. Published number 20 today. It's fucking hard work, like an actual YouTube video, not like a short every day.
I want to ask you all about that.
Cool.
100 days of AI on the YouTube channel. I did see some of those videos come through, at least like on the Twitter feed and stuff. So like, what is your focus in terms of YouTubing about AI? Because I'm on YouTube as well. I'm spending most of my time, and you're right, it's in literally just before this call, I was finishing editing my next video for next week. Yeah. It's so time consuming. I can't even imagine how you're doing a video every single day. Like I can't get one out every, it takes me 2 weeks to get a video out.
First they're all like screencasts. So I think it makes it a little easier. Mm-hmm. I recorded one earlier today and I saw a piece of news about like ByteDance released their latest, there's LLM that's like huge and it's open source and stuff. And so mm-hmm. I was like, I saw this piece of news and I look it up in Perplexity. And I put all this shit into Notebook LM and then I have it condensed that down and I put it into Gamma as a presentation. That was the video. It was 12 minutes. But I was like, hey, cause I get feedback like, hey, I just want to know about like practical shit that I can do with AI. And that's super practical. It's like, I see this thing. I use Perplexity for all my news now. It's replaced like Google News and BBC. Mm. And this is like an actual workflow I would go through of like, if I was a, you know, fucking marketing person at a company and competitor X released this product, that's exactly what I would do is like, go get all of the stuff about it, smush it together and make a presentation out of it for my boss. Cool. But they're all kind of like that. Like I did one the other day, it was like Bolt versus Lovable and actually designing a page for our WordPress plugin.
Nice. So I'm doing this thing now. I'm working a lot on YouTube, but one of the next pieces of my business that I need to put into place is a weekly newsletter. Mm. I'm building this Builder Methods business. It's essentially a creator like content led business. I've got the YouTube rhythm down. Now I need to add like an email newsletter piece. I've been growing the list, but I haven't been sending to it. So I need to send a weekly newsletter. And I want it to be sort of like what you're describing, where I'm pulling news, like pieces of news from different sources. And I'm focusing on like the developers using yep. AI in their workflow, right? So, you know, news from the big tools, news from the industry about how to you know, improve your workflows with AI. So I'm actually building a SaaS tool now. I'm calling it Newsletter Lab to help me create my weekly newsletter. And the idea, I'm like halfway through building it right now. It's like I'm putting in sources. So like RSS feeds, podcasts, mm-hmm. YouTube channels, blogs, and it'll just monitor these sources for links and news items that are relevant to my audience, that meet my criteria. And then it'll like automatically score them based on what I want to share in my newsletter and just assemble my weekly newsletter for me. And then I just need to go in every week and like approve and edit a few things and then just, you know, send it out.
That's awesome.
It's like, I want to send a newsletter. So instead of just sending the newsletter, I got to like build a tool.
It's very developer-y of you. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah. How is that going? Like, I know I see you on Twitter, like talking about Builder Method a lot. Like how's it going? Like,
I think it's off to a good start. I'm at the point. So like, you know, Builder Methods is, I'm still trying to figure out what it is, at least like what the business model is and how I'm monetizing it, because that is my main open question at the moment. Luckily for me, which is different from my history in business, is like I actually started with the marketing channel first, which is YouTube. So I've been working all year on just growing my YouTube channel. I've been able to grow it starting from around like 2,000 subscribers at the beginning of the year. Now it's like over 12K. And ever since I started making these videos about AI, it started to really pick up, and I'm putting a lot of effort, like multiple days per week, just producing one video, which is really time consuming, but it is a good top of funnel channel. And I'm really excited about that, because it's kind of like the first time I actually found a solid channel for something, where I'm actually exposed to new leads every single day. They're coming into my email list. They're filling out surveys. They're inquiring about products and courses and coaching, but I'm not actually offering any of that yet. The only thing I am offering so far is this free open source tool called Agent OS, which is a tool for developers to, give their Claude code or their cursor like an operating system to build specs and build software more efficiently using these tools. That's been off to a pretty good start as well. It seems to be like some pretty good traction as a free tool. So that's also bringing action into the business on the top of the funnel.
Yep.
My big question right now that I'm thinking through is like, okay, it's time to get some first dollars into this business.
Got to make some cheddar. Yeah.
And I've been weighing different options. Like for a while I thought this was going to be like a courses business where I would just create courses about building with AI. Now I'm sort of starting to rethink that, and I'm leaning more toward like a membership. Like you get a Builder Methods Pro membership, and you'll pay an annual fee for that, and making it more like workshop based. I think I'm going to start to do live workshops on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And because the thing with courses in this type of space is that, as you know, like these tools are shifting, they're changing so quickly.
Yeah.
So I can't create a course because it's going to be out of date like in a month. So I think these live workshops where I could just do them repeatedly and they evolve along with the tools seems like it actually helps people a little bit more. And then the idea is like members get access to these workshops. Non-members can buy tickets to these workshops and sort of start to build it out that way. And I'm weighing out different like additional revenue options, like maybe sponsorships, maybe cohort programs. I'm also talking to a lot of teams who want some coaching on like coaching their developer teams on leveraging AI. So yeah, a lot of open questions, things I need to start building. But I think as a whole, like buildermethods.com and the YouTube channel has what to me like the hardest part of the business started to figure out, which is the marketing channel. So
yeah. I want to talk about like monetizing AI, I guess, a little bit. But I have a similar approach. I'm just earlier, I think, which is like, I just want to get through these 100 days. And my hypothesis is like, I told my wife, after these 100 days, like my life is going to be different, because I'm going to have this huge funnel and this channel and this audience and this way to do a thing. I just don't know what the thing is right now. So I was on vacation 2 weeks ago and I recorded, from my freaking bed, like one of the videos, because like I got to get it out. But I think that's the question for a lot of folks is, how do you monetize AI? Because there's like, we'll just give the handful of options. One, I like as just as a corollary, and I want to talk about SaaS in a minute. Mm-hmm. I think what is happening is the gap of like bootstrap companies and bootstrap SaaS is widening a lot. Where like bootstrap SaaS used to fit in this nice little spot. I think what's happening is like, it's so commoditized that it's really easy, or you're freaking Anthropic.
Yes.
And I think
you're right about that.
I didn't explain that word. That middle ground is eroding, where you can build like a solid million or $5 million business, is just different. Anyways, we can talk about that in a minute.
But I think I'm with you on that. It does seem like, I think it's still dependent on which vertical you're talking about. I think there's, on one hand, it seems harder. It's always been harder. It's always getting harder and harder. Like SaaS is traditionally hard, but it seems like hard as fuck now.
Yeah.
But there's still the play, I think, to do like the B2B super niched business, like this solution for HVAC companies, whatever, but I think that even that is very quickly going to start to become eliminated with AI. Like, you know, people like to predict like, oh, there's going to be a whole collapse of the SaaS industry. And I don't believe that. But starting a new SaaS from the ground up today, I've already decided, like, I'm just not, like, that's not going to be my business. I think that ship has sailed for the bootstrapper, starting up.
To start, I still think, I mean, Castos is an amazing business. Like, it's such a good, we have low churn. We have customers coming in. We do some marketing stuff. Like, it's just kind of sitting there marinating. It's not a rocket ship, but it's like a really steady business. And I don't expect it to go anywhere because, like, SaaS is, it's like a rock. Like, you got to freaking do a ton of shit to move it. But once you get it there, like, it does pretty good at staying there.
I think, you know, what you're saying about the gap with AI, two new challenges bootstrapped SaaS businesses are going to face in the next couple of years, like 1, 2, 3 years. They've always had the challenge of competition. Like, there's just hyper competition in every single category. It doesn't matter how niched down you are. There are 50, 100 or more competitors trying to make the same exact tool as you. And then it's a battle of, like, getting customers to switch from this tool to that tool, right? Like, that's always been there for the, and that's harder than ever. But now you have the additional challenge of, number one, the AI tools themselves. So ChatGPT and Claude, especially ChatGPT, I think, and OpenAI, like, they're coming for everyone. you know, like, they're making these agents, and, like, they want to be like the everything app that, like, any small business can use to accomplish tasks. And it used to be like B2B SaaS companies can replace spreadsheets. Well, now ChatGPT can replace a lot of spreadsheets. So there's that challenge. And then there's also for maybe like selling to larger businesses, there's always been the question of, does the business hire a SaaS tool and just purchase like the enterprise plan, or do they build their own custom software? And it used to be easy to just buy the SaaS tool because custom software is way too hard. Now custom software ain't so hard anymore because you can have a smart employee or two in-house who knows their way around AI tools, and they can whip up the perfect tool for their use case, for their department, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah. We might not be there today, but there's no question that that's coming in the next couple of years, you know?
So it kind of begs the question then back to, how do you monetize AI? Like SaaS and like the wrapper companies, like I know Jordan is doing. No, right? No effing way. Like
I think Jordan's taken a good approach though. Focusing on AI voice is interesting. Cause like, that's one where like, I don't know that like an OpenAI would necessarily get into that side of it. Google might though. Like Google sort of is already. They already have like an AI voice thing. So, but he's playing the VC game. So that you sort of have to take those swings, you know?
Yeah, no, for sure. I mean, I think I agree. I wouldn't start another SaaS today, especially like a wrapper kind of company. I think the membership concept is really good. That's the most popular that I see of these folks who like have knowledge, have an audience. A lot of them are on school, which like, that's cool. I pay for several school communities and they're really valuable.
That's been my take on it for me personally. Like the decision to make my next company be this like membership community education focused. That's where I see the wave and the opportunity. You know, because we're just entering this time where there is just so much rapid change in every single industry. And for me, I'm a developer, I'm a builder. So it's like, it's affecting us first. Like people who build software, it is like everything is changing. You know, people are losing their jobs. People are redefining how they build. The way that I build is completely different from it was like 12 months ago. And so there's just a mass demand for like staying ahead of the curve and just learning. So that's what I'm trying to sort of get the timing right on is entering. Like that's where for me personally, I see that as the opportunity. And then marketing wise, I also think that creators and audience-led marketing is, for me, the only one that works. I know that other businesses are have success in other ways, but like SEO is going to get harder and harder. It already is. And that's being replaced with AI results. Cold email is not as easy as it used to be. Ads are insanely expensive. Everything else is expensive and difficult, but people trust people. And that's where video really works, I think, you know?
Yeah, I think about just like in general, the like we can go away from AI, which is like SEO, like you're going away from the risk of AI by going away from SEO, or you can kind of lean into AI, which is like talking about it, right? And talking about using it and adopting it on a human platform, which is exactly what you're doing. Mm-hmm. It's exactly what I'm doing too, which is like,
yeah,
a platform where people trust people and want to engage and learn from people about a topic that is affecting literally everyone on earth right now. Mm-hmm. I mean, my kids have ChatGPT on their phone, like 13.
We did a road trip the other day. Our new favorite thing to do in the car is to run ChatGPT and do like a trivia game in the car with the kids. You know,
that's cool. Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy.
Yeah. You know? It's a trip. Yeah. I mean, I think, right behind YouTube, my favorite channel right now is Cold Email, though. That kind of tells you the state of the rest of the conventional, like, white glove, happy marketing channels that I know you and I kind of grew up on. Like, it ain't content. It ain't SEO. It ain't LinkedIn. LinkedIn outreach works pretty well. I use Dripify to, like, automate a bunch of that.
My whole life, I've heard about people talk about LinkedIn. I'm like, one of these days, I'll do something on LinkedIn.
Oh, it's a cesspool. I mean, like for organic stuff, it's just terrible. But sure enough, like you send a bunch of, it's just like cold email, just on a platform. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, I think like, and maybe that's why I feel like the capacity for kind of bootstrap SaaS is narrowing, is the number of decent marketing channels is really reduced to cold email, maybe YouTube, and like, founder-led marketing.
Yeah.
Which I think it's will like, definitely have its day soon.
I think it's like it's always been, if you already have an inroad, if you have some sort of advantage, whether it's you have a large audience or you really know about some painful aspect of some niche industry that nobody else even knows about.
Which is pretty unlikely now.
Which is pretty unlikely, but it does happen. But then it's a question of like, do you even have the capability to build a product? It's industry specific, but those opportunities still exist, but it's harder than ever, you know? And like, and when we're talking about a bootstrapper, like, yes, you might be able to find one of those rare opportunities that still exist. But if you're bootstrapping, it's a matter of time. Like, how much time can you invest into this risk? And how much risk are you willing to take on, especially at what age are you in your career, right? Like for me, I decided like, because I've been doing SaaS businesses for years, and I decided like it's not worth investing multiple years into a big question mark of whether I can actually get it to product market fit. Whereas something like investing in YouTube and then investing in a membership type business, that seems a little bit more straightforward to get to revenue.
I heard, I think John Warlow, like the Built to Sell guy, talk about like 10-year cycles in your life. That like, it's just a natural kind of cadence, 7 to 10 years, you have like a career change or a life change or something like that. And that definitely resonates. I mean, we're right at 10 years for me with like Podcast Motor, and then Castos is, you know, a couple of years behind. And I won't do it forever, right? I'm not going anywhere. Like Cast is not going anywhere, but like 100% of my time on it is like not the case anymore. And actually I think it's healthy. You know, like I've taken a kind of half a step back, and the business in some ways operates better because of that.
Yep. Yeah, I mean that's where I ended up with my last SaaS as well. It's still a current SaaS that I own called Clarity Flow. And I was full-time, 100% focused on it. No other shiny objects for 3+ years, for almost 4 years of that business. And then it got to a point where it it didn't turn into the rocket ship that I hoped it would originally. And so I decided, like, I'm still going to hold it. It still operates just fine, but I can't invest years into it anymore. I need to start to think about what that next phase is. And that's what I've been focused on for the last 2 years, sort of hopping around different ideas until a couple of months ago when I really landed on this builder methods direction. But you know, here, I know that we're both in our 40s. It's, the mental game is so much different now than it was in my 30s and late 20s when I was doing new startup ideas. Like back then, I was just like, whatever, I'll just try whatever, you know?
Yeah.
I could throw a couple of years at this or that. I've got plenty of time, you know? And I know I'm not retiring anytime soon, but my energy, like I know that I only have a couple more years of like super high energy output to throw at a business. And I already feel it now. I have to, and what that does is it makes it much more difficult to pull the trigger and commit to a business direction without, you know, just, it used to be just like, all right, I got this, I think it's a good idea. Let's try it. And then commit myself to a year.
Yeah.
And now it's like, well, if I'm going to try something, I got to be really feeling confident about it, you know?
Yeah. I think it's the confident and the time aspect of it. It's like, I want to do something for the next 10 years. I want to do something I can do for the next 10 years.
Yeah.
And like, yeah, when you're 45 or 40, whatever, like that math is different. The risk tolerance is different. The ability to work is different. The place you should work kind of in the stack is different too. Like, you know, shouldn't work in the weeds as much, should be a thought leader at this point because we've been doing this a while. And I think there's definitely like an important part in like the kind of ecosystem for all that.
Yeah. For me, I tend to do things a little bit backwards for some reason. I think that in previous businesses, I was much more high level. Like when I was running audience ops, I had a whole team, including managers, and I was removed from that business. Like didn't touch it day to day.
Glad you got out of that one, huh?
Especially I sold it in 2021, which is like about 2 years before AI really came around. And I had no idea that the AI wave was coming. I did hear about like GPT-2 at the time, but okay. It was just this novelty that nobody was touching. But yeah, I am glad I'm out of that business now. But like back then I was much more high level, like systems, team, influencer, not in the weeds. And now I actually like the craft. Like I'm really enjoying the craft of designing cool. And building software and also creating videos, creating content on YouTube. Like I like spending a lot of hours on that kind of stuff. Not to a point where I just want to do that like as an employee for another company. Like I still have the drive to like own my own business. So that's why I'm trying to figure out how do I turn this craft into a business that I both enjoy to work on every day and can actually grow. You know.
Tell me about your process for YouTube.
This is interesting. I want to hear yours too. I know you shared it a little bit already. So what you're doing with the 100 days, I think is really smart because the key strategy, no matter what kind of YouTube strategy you're doing, is like the more videos you do, the better you're going to get. You're going to improve the game is just improve something on every single video. And there are so many little things that you can improve from choosing the right topic to the script, to the title, the thumbnail, how you edit, how the pacing of the video. There are so many little things that you can just improve. Like two videos ago for me, I switched from reading my script to using a teleprompter and that like saved an hour of mm-hmm. recording time, you know?
Yeah.
So right now it's for me, it's all about my big challenge right now is figuring out how I can cut down the time it takes me to produce a video. Earlier in the year, I had an editor that I was working with And it was more of a workflow where I would just record something raw, throw it into Dropbox, let him do all the post-production. And that worked fine. He was a good editor. I didn't really have the topic selection nailed down to a science the way that I do. It's not really a science now, but I just put a lot more care and effort into it.
Yeah.
So my process now is mostly thinking a lot about what the next most important topic is that I want to create a video about. I usually just, I'm always thinking of something that's like on my mind, and that's usually the thing that I'm going to do next. But then I'll spend like a good few days, like shower thoughts and stuff, just thinking about like, okay, I know the general topic, but how am I going to frame it? Like what's the title and the thumbnail going to be generally? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And I'll just have a rough concept for that first. Then I'll spend a day or two doing a script for it. And I'm using a lot of Claude in this process now. So I have a Claude project called YouTube Planning. And in that project, I've uploaded all the transcripts from my past like 10 videos. So it knows my tone. It knows my past topic selections. It knows how I like to say things. And so then I'll write into Claude like my raw concept for a video, maybe a couple bullet points on like what I want this video to cover. And then Claude will draft me a first draft of the script. And then I'll go back and forth with Claude maybe 5 times. And then I'll bring it into a text doc and I'll just tweak a few phrasings to make it really sound like me. All right. So now that's like 2 days of work. I get that dialed in. I've got a full script. I'd say most of the video is scripted. Usually the middle part where I'm like showing my screen and doing some coding stuff, that part is not scripted, but especially the intro. I put the most emphasis on the first 2 minutes to focus on the hook. Then I do recording, usually like on a fresh day, like in the morning. I just started using the teleprompter again. So I put my iPhone on the teleprompter and read it off of that. And then I get into editing, which is another, usually like 2 days of editing. I've jumped around from different tools. Right now I'm using Adobe Premiere and I've started to build up a library of B-roll. That's something that's been really helpful. So I do a lot of B-roll. So there's a lot of like me talking on camera. That's like the whole video. There's a middle section where it's me plus my screen showing something, but there's a lot of time where it's just me on camera. And for that, I really try to show some B-roll at least every 10 or 20 seconds. And it's usually B-roll that I created showing clips of things that I'm talking about. Mm-hmm. And a lot of my videos are the same. So I'm doing videos about software development with AI. So I've started to build up a library of B-roll clips that I talk about all the time. So I just reuse a lot of the same clips. If you look at a few of my videos, you'll start to see like these B-roll clips are the same. And so that I think helps with the rhythm and it keeps viewers engaged and it especially in those first 2 minutes, like a lot of B-roll in the first 2 minutes just to keep that action going. Mm-hmm. What else? After that, I also use Claude to like draft 10 different title ideas and thumbnail ideas. I usually just settle on one and then I'll use YouTube's like A-B tester for the thumbnail. So and Claude gave me like two things to test.
Yep.
In terms of structure, I've sort of landed on first minute is like an intro to hook them and sort of convince you to watch the whole video. At the end of the first minute, I'm going to make a pitch for my newsletter. Every video now has like a dedicated pitch with some B-roll that says like, if you want to really stay ahead of the curve with AI, join my Builder Briefing weekly newsletter, you know? So that points them to my website and people are going over there and signing up every day. So that's
interesting.
That's kind of good. And then I get into the meat of the video, usually showing my screen. Then we get into the ending 20 seconds. So if you liked this video, So if you like this video all about Claude Code, well, there's this other part of Claude Code that you really need to learn about. And I've got another video that talks all about that. So when you're, so now like, you know, watch this one over there and point.
Yeah.
You know, get them into the rabbit hole. So,
How do you script the whole video while sharing your screen? Because like presumably like you're clicking around buttons and doing stuff and writing code. Are you like talking about that code you're writing, or is it just like they're disconnected and so what you show on the screen isn't really important?
When I'm like working on something on screen or like actually demonstrating, like me doing it live, not live, but like on the video. It's not scripted word for word. But I do spend a lot of time pre-planning what I'm going to show. Mm-hmm. And sometimes that involves like building a demo app or something like that. So that's another prep time
that I have to
figure out. But I'm pretty good now at like, because if I'm going to show it on a video, I'm really familiar with what it is already. Like I've already done it 100 times, like just in general. So like I'm pretty good at just like doing it. And my camera is right here to my left. So I just pretend like I'm talking to a coworker or like an intern. Mm-hmm. And I'm just, and they're looking over my shoulder and I'm clicking around and I'm explaining what I'm doing, you know?
Yeah.
But you know, that's also the hardest part to edit. So like I just edited one today. The final video is going to be like 20 minutes. The recording was like an hour of footage. So there's a lot that I just cut, you know, like and especially if I'm not working off of a script, like for those sections, I'm going to ramble like way too much. So when I get into the edit, I'm like, okay, I just said the same thing like four different times. I could cut three of them.
You know? Yeah. So That's cool. So a couple of things that I've kind of played around with. So I was doing on my YouTube channel, like a fair bit of like founder stuff and sales stuff before. And that was all entirely scripted. I mean, I'll just say what I did because it's really shameful is like, I would basically the skyscraper method for YouTube, right? Just take like this video and this video and this video, stick them into Notebook LM, and have it just give me the best parts of all of them. And then either stick that in Claude or I used subscriber.ai a little bit. It's like a script. It's a YouTube script writing tool. It gives pretty good scripts. Like they're really thorough. It has all these like, here's the payoff and here's the hook and all this kind of stuff.
Nice.
Yeah. So that's fine. Like I think if you're doing talking head stuff like that, something like that is fine.
Have you tried, what is it? VidIQ?
Yeah, I don't use it. I have it. I use it just for like in my YouTube dashboard to give me some data.
I think I had an account like a year ago and I looked at it like three times and it just it just never got into my workflow, you know.
Yeah, yeah. I think scripting is really powerful. Like I think everyone should script as much as they can. It just makes you sound better because the words are planned out and you're not just winging it. It's so important.
That was a big difference. So earlier in the year, like around January, February, I was doing these no script videos. I would just record raw and give that to my editor and be like, you figure it out. Find the interesting parts, you know? And no surprise, like those videos got like 100 views and the ones that I do now do thousands because I actually care. I actually write, especially the hook, you know, like that is completely scripted. I used to think like, oh, I can't read a script because it won't sound natural. I think it's still pretty obvious that I'm reading off of a script, but I've improved at making it sound natural. But either way, the content is just more compelling because Claude helped me write it and I stressed over every word and like the positioning and the pacing, you know?
So that's the next thing I need to do is like script at least the intro and the outro, like the hook in the first minute and then the bit at the end. Cause what I'm doing is like, I mean, it's every day. So it's like, fuck. And some days I'm doing two a day if I want to like get ahead. like, I just turn the camera on and I say, like, I have a pretty good, like, I've done it enough to where I say, like, in the first 10 seconds, you have to, like, tell them exactly what's about to happen. Like, it is a lot more like a short than anything these days. So, like, the one today was like, ByteDance just released the biggest LLM ever, and it's entirely free and open source, blah, 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 right? Like, you gotta hook them.
Yeah, for sure.
And I'm sharing my screen the entire time, basically. Like, sometimes I'll be full size, and then I'll go down to, like, the thumbnail thing, or, like, whatever. So you can see my screen, but I'm just, like, playing around with the tools and stuff.
I think you're right that it's all about the intro script first 10, 20 seconds for sure. But I think it's even more important to have the topic, like the topic selection, right?
Yeah.
And which then is like the title and the thumbnail. But it's not just like any topic, as long as you have a strong thumbnail, will work. It's more about like just choosing something that you're pretty sure that your audience will be like, ooh, what's that?
Mm-hmm.
You know, mm-hmm. And that's the hardest thing. You'll never really know. I mean,
yeah,
but, yeah.
Yeah. That's wild. Yeah. I mean, I'm editing about half of my videos just cause I'm so far behind. Like I can't, it's not reasonable.
I wanted to ask you, are you editing or you have an editor?
Yeah. About half the ones I'm editing. And I just use ScreenFlow. It's pretty basic, like just cut, you know, different tracks, mute, zoom, all that kind of stuff. Just because they're every day, like it can't be, you know, freaking Mr. Beast style.
I use ScreenFlow. I still use it sometimes, but that was my go-to for like 15 years. Only this year I started to play around with the Pro Tools. I was using Descript for a little while, but it's just too buggy and slow. And then I was using DaVinci Resolve for a couple of months, which was pretty good. And I just recently switched to Adobe Premiere. And the only reason I'm switching between these is I'm just trying to find like what is the absolute fastest workflow for me with keyboard shortcuts and everything and tracking my B-roll. And right now that's Adobe Premiere.
You know? Yeah. 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 But I mean,
I'm like saying it today. I was like, I got to hire an editor because this is too much, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. They're definitely a lot more expensive these days. Like you go hire an editor, like even in the Philippines, they're like $2,500.
Mm. My concern also with it is like my thought was like, all right, maybe I can find like a smart, but low cost editor and I can just really train them on my method of using Adobe Premiere. And I probably could do something like that, but my concern is that my content is technical and the most time consuming part is choosing the B-roll and putting the B-roll clips in place. And you can't even do that unless you know what I'm talking
about.
That
would be tough. Yeah.
You know, like when I talk about a piece of code, you got to show like that code, you know?
Right.
And
right.
I can't find a developer, a video editor who would know that kind of stuff.
You know? Yeah. Yeah. I want to like wrap by like talking about kind of where you think AI is going. So see like, in this week in the news, like Sam Altman saying like, oh, it's probably overhyped and everybody's talking about a bubble and all this kind of stuff. Like, I'll tell you two months ago, I was like kind of depressed and like, super worried about it. Like, holy shit, it's going to ruin my life and my business. We're all going to be living on a farm, like, you know, in a commune.
There's a lot of like doom scenarios and like many to choose from. Are you thinking about like it's going to crush your business? Are you thinking about it's going to like kill humanity? Are you thinking about like it's going to cause an economic depression? Like,
like the first and the last. Yeah, I think that probably like what's pretty likely is it will cause mass unemployment, which will cause a huge depression. It's happening. Like you're dumb and blind if you don't see it in the numbers from the unemployment numbers and the new job numbers. Like it's 100% happening. Nobody's hiring
it's interesting.
Other than these big AI companies.
I agree with you. That's the thing that I'm most concerned about, I would say, is like at some point in the very near future, it doesn't feel like we're there yet, but I think sometime in the next two to five years, it's going to start to come for all the jobs.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to be a massive disruption. And I just don't know how bad that's going to get, whether it's going to be a depression, whether it's just going to be a recession, whether there's going to be some new, I don't know what it would be, but some
like something rotation into.
Yeah. Like there could be a positive that comes out of that. Maybe quicker than we think it will, but that's being optimistic. I think there's going to be a lot of pain out there.
Mm-hmm.
I agree that like on that front, like you're blind if you just don't see that coming. But at the same time, it's like the everyday person today does not see that coming. Yes, they're talking about it on the news, but it's still just like, oh, that's funny. Yeah. But like the school teachers in my kid's school or my parents who are still working, like it's still every day. Like nothing's really changing. They're not. Yeah, they've maybe tried ChatGPT once or twice, but it's not in their life yet.
Yeah.
For me, I'm a developer, so my whole industry is already undergoing massive changes. But there's no getting around it, especially as the older generation is going to retire out. The newer generation, there's going to be fewer of those jobs to replace. You know, I know that younger people coming out of college, it's bleak because of AI right now.
Yeah. What are you most excited about? I'll give you a second to think, and I'll just say how my perspective has shifted a lot since I kind of was scared and leaning away from AI to like leaning as hard into it as I possibly can. Cause now like AI is the rising tide, and either you get like smoshed by the tsunami or you're in the boat on the top of the wave. Right.
And like, I mean, that's how I feel about it too. That's how I feel. I'm most excited about it based on what I do. I build products. Yeah. So I'm super excited about I could build products 100 times faster, you know? I get a lot of comments on my stuff from developers who are like, oh, you're part of the problem. You're going to replace all developers with this AI stuff, right? Like there's some negativity out there about it. And I just don't agree with that mindset. It's like, okay, if you, for me, I'm just talking about like programmers, coders, right? If you just really like writing code, if you are a programmer and you like the art of programming, then I hate to tell you, that's going away. You're not like, you could do it as a hobby. You could do it as a craft, but businesses and production level software is not going to be written by humans in the very near future. It already, 90% of my code is not.
Yeah.
But if you are more like the only reason I ever got into software development was to build products. Like it's a way for me to build and ship my own products. So from that perspective, I love it. And the side of it, and this is, I've done a lot of content on this recently where it's like to me, the best, most creative, most interesting parts of creating software are the parts that are not handled by AI, and they probably won't be anytime soon. So figuring out the right problem to solve for users, architecting the right UI and the user experience, positioning it, communicating the problem, marketing the problem. That's the most interesting part to me. And it's still very technical. It's still very, you know, really focusing on the architecture and solving like system problems.
Yep.
But I don't need to remember how to write a line of Ruby code or JavaScript code anymore in order to do that. That's the AI's job now. And I think the sooner we as an industry can start to embrace that mindset. But then I'm also really excited about like, I think that I just really think it's a multiplier. Like when we talk about YouTube content and just content in general, any kind of writing at this point, I'm becoming much more comfortable leaning heavily on AI.
Yeah. And kind of like a director, right? Like, go, yeah, it's like, this is generally the plan, go this way.
Yes. It's not like, it's not a replacement for me as the person. Like it's not going to create the content for the content won't exist without me in the picture because I'm the one with the idea.
Yeah.
And I come with the idea because I see some need out there. And then I come with like a raw version of it. Like here's kind of what I want to say about this, a couple bullet points. Now give me a draft and make it sound interesting. And then all of a sudden, like their draft is like way better than something I would have written. And then I just need to tweak it a few times. And it's like, and now I've published something that is 10 times better than what I would have written myself on a blank page. And it's still getting my idea out there, you know? Mm. And that is just a multiplier, you know? When people say it replaces creativity, like, no, it doesn't. To me, it multiplies it, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
One thing, cool, I haven't really talked about this, but a lot of artists, visual artists, music artists, a lot of them talk about like AI replacing that whole part of the world. And I don't agree with that at all. I think that there's always going to be, I think that's a big prediction that is very wrong. If people think that like there's not going to be human rock stars and bands and musical artists and painters out there in the world, I think there always will be that. And writers too, you know, authors of books and stuff. Yes, AI can like technically create stuff. Like it can generate a pop song. It can generate a book. But I think that there's always going to be people creating art because it comes from their personal experience, their inspiration. And then there's always going to be people who want to enjoy the art of a human. There's always going to be that demand, I think, you know?
Yeah. I don't agree.
No?
I hardcore don't agree. No, I think, I just think that we're not there, right? Like in the context of today, like you as the artist in your code context, you have to guide the AI to this place, right? And that's what AI is today, is it's like a really helpful assistant. It's really great autocomplete, right? Which like not to minimize it, it's an amazing tool. I literally spend like half of my waking hours in some kind of AI tool, which is allowing me to run a, you know, freaking seven-figure SaaS business, like with half the team that we used to have, or a quarter. I think, let's call it end of next year, there will be such an advance to where it's going to take a couple more levels of cognition to where it's going to say, oh, this is what a good song is. This is what makes like AC/DC and like Pearl Jam and all that. This is what makes them good. I've analyzed a bajillion bytes of code and I understand like what makes good rock music.
I think I could do that already today. There was that.
I'm going to go create...
Wasn't there a band on Spotify that was like completely AI generated, did like a million downloads or something like that?
Yeah. And it's going to, and I think the big thing is it's going to go create 1,000 versions of different songs and one of them will be a winner.
I think that's true. I think that's going to happen. It's already happening. But I also think that is going to create more demand for like the pure stuff, the human stuff, you know, like people are going to know that that's AI and then they're going to seek out real art that's going to create a hunger for it. You know, like I was listening to, I like to listen to Bill Simmons' podcast, which was mostly about sports, but sometimes about, he was talking to Chuck Klosterman about AI and they were talking about Nirvana. Right. And they made the point, like, if you play a Nirvana song to two people, maybe one person is a bit younger and they don't really know the story of Kurt Cobain and the fact that he committed suicide and like they're just hearing the song Smells Like Teen Spirit, and the other person knows the whole backstory. Like the person who knows the whole backstory is going to receive that completely, is going to hear the music completely differently than the person who knows nothing about Kurt Cobain, you know, because they know there's a person behind it and he was going through a lot of shit. So it's like, I think that kind of thing is always going to be there, you know, I don't know.
We'll see. Who knows? We'll see. I'm happy. I wanted to talk because I'm glad we're talking because we've known each other for a long time. I'm glad to see you're kind of leaning heavy into this. I'm super excited about leaning heavy into AI. I think it's definitely the most exciting thing going on in our kind of like digital business world right now. Whatever kind of flavor of that you want to call it.
The whole world. So I talked to my family about it. They're like, oh, here he goes again, talking about AI. You know?
Well, I was down visiting family last week and I was like, yeah, I did this thing in ChatGPT and then I did this thing in Claude. And they go, what's Claude?
Yeah, nobody knows.
I was like, bud, you're cooked. You're totally cooked.
Yep.
All right, buddy. So what's the best? So CastJam on Twitter. What's the best place? Where's the newsletter? What do you want folks to do?
Yeah, I'm working on buildermethods.com. That's the thing.
Awesome. Awesome, buddy. Thanks, Brian. It's good to catch up, man.
All right, Craig.